J-Tech Studios in Atlanta, Georgia. It's America's favorite game show podcast. Tell them what they've won. And now, here are your hosts, Tom Bastek and Mike Jacobs.
Hello and welcome in. It's America's favorite game show podcast. Tell them what they've won. We're the game show guys, your hosts, Tom Bastek, and alongside of me as always,
I am Boogaloo Shrimp. How's it going this week, Tom?
What? No, you're not. Boogaloo Shrimp. No. You always have wanted to be Boogaloo Shrimp, but you are Mike Jacobs.
I went down to the courthouse last week, changed my name legally. I'm now Boogaloo Shrimp.
Wow. Okay.
Should
we take it again? I mean, we can.
No, it's fine. Let's go. I am Mike Jacobs. Hello, Tom. How's it going
today, Mike,
brother?
It's great, man. Another wonderful week up here in the mountains. Starting to get cold, man. We had two mornings in a row, 26 degrees when we woke up.
Holy cats. Yeah, it was freezing this morning when I woke up, but it burned off over the course of the day. We actually spent the day outside with some friends today. It was very nice.
Nice. Oh, that's great. I'm glad to hear it. The only thing I'm doing outside is putting on a jacket and taking the dog for a walk. Like, that's it.
Mm-hmm. Well, you got you got the mountain air going against you.
Yeah, it's so good. I as a big guy, I love it.
Oh, fair enough, yeah.
You know, I don't like sweating all that much, but I do a lot of sweating, so the winter is kind of my bitch. Can I say that?
I just did.
Hey, speaking of Boogaloo Shrimp, I do have one bit of housekeeping I want to get to before we get to the news with Christian.
Ooh, yeah, hit me.
Dude, I had no idea, and I know you and I talked about this, but I'd like to apologize to the listeners, that Boogaloo Shrimp was Turbo from Breakin' to Electric Boogaloo.
Oh, man. What a claim to fame. So I guess we could have figured that out, right? Because what breakdancer is not in that movie, probably?
Well, and the thing is, I never did any research on Boogaloo Shrimp. I just laughed at his name and said, okay, that's Boogaloo Shrimp. Great.
Right,
you know,
right,
I mean,
right.
Like,
same here.
Not realizing that Boogaloo Shrimp was like a incredible breakdancer and got cast in Breakin' and, of course, Breakin' 2 Electric Boogaloo.
No relation to Boogaloo Shrimp.
Mm-mm. But I will tell you this. My apologies, because mad respect for that guy. One of my favorite movies, dude. Mad respect.
You know, it's funny. I've never actually seen the first one, and I've only seen the second one because it was like, I don't know, I guess it was an internet joke back in the day or something, but just Breakin' 2 Electric Boogaloo became part of the cultural zeitgeist at some point.
Dude, if I could tell you how many times on stage doing improv, we've been like, you know, you've referred to something happening again like the second time, and you'd be like, it's time for dinner take two, Electric Boogaloo.
Exactly.
Like, I mean, it just became a trope so many times.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
Oh, my gosh. Well, anyway, so apologies to Boogaloo Shrimp. Dude, I should have reached out. I should have tried to gotten him for an interview.
I mean, it's not too late. Look, we have an entire new season coming up here.
This is
20
true.
New episodes and we got to fill. If we can fill one of those with a Boogaloo Shrimp interview, that would be amazing.
That would be amazing. Well, I'm sorry, I just have not been able to get with Carlos Hernandez yet. This is kind of housekeeping in advance. He was on this season of American Idol, and he's a buddy of mine, and I was going to bring him in for an interview. He has been so busy that we have not had a chance, but I promise you at some point we're going to get him too, and we'll do an interview and find out, like, go behind the scenes on American Idol and find out what it's really like to be there.
Yeah, that would be super awesome. But, I mean, as you can imagine, someone who has done well in American Idol, they have a career now, so they're not always easy to get a hold of.
He did terribly awful in American Idol and still has a career.
Oh, well then. Is this a William Hung sort of situation?
Yeah, kind of. And I'll put up both of the links to his two appearances on American Idol, and you'll see exactly
I'm even more excited. I did not realize this. I thought he was a legit talented singer, and I was like, hey, who cares about talent? I want to see the crap.
I honestly feel like they pushed him through to, and they actually caught a lot of flack about it because they pushed him. He was kind of like comedic in his delivery of everything, and they pushed him through to Hollywood, and they did not push like a gal who was autistic, I think. And so there was a big hubbub there about why pushing him through and not her. Like, you could have taken that ticket, that spot, and given it to her and instead give it to this goofball.
As opposed to a gimmick that we know is not going to win. Yeah.
Yeah, which he didn't. In his first episode, he washed out. But
I mean, and that's I think that's a fair point to bring up is like,
oh, yeah. No, no.
We got a lot to talk about when it comes to this show, but I think that is, you know, an underscore to a lot of the points that I want to bring up later.
Sure, I'm down with that. Right now, let's get down with the news with Christian.
Absolutely.
Light up your cigarette, crack open a beer, put the kiddos to bed. From chaos around the world to carnage in your very own front yard, it's time for the news.
Thank you, Tom. Thank you, Mike. This is the news brought to you by BuzzerBlog.com. Well, this week, we can add another entry to the list of game show hosts who have been to space. Good Morning America co-anchor and $100,000 pyramid host Michael Strahan will fly to space on Blue Origin's next space flight. Currently scheduled for December 9th, the mission will be the New Shepard rocket's third human flight this year and marks the first with a full crew of six members in the capsule, including the host of the $100,000 pyramid. How cool is that?
Wow.
I have to tell you, there's a very big jealousy thing there for me because I'm a gigantic space guy. I mean, I went to space camp as a child, almost went to the University of Arizona for their advanced astronomy program. Like, I'm very pleased to see all this happening because it means that eventually the cost to go to space will come down. So hopefully by the time that I'm 70 and hopefully still in good health, I can afford to go to space as opposed to the $1 million that it costs now or whatever it is.
Yeah, that's a good point. I definitely never went to space camp or anything like that, but I was definitely like just always fascinated by the topic of it. And, you know, maybe that'd be a cool way to go out. Like if you're like, I don't know, 110 or something and, you know, you're going to die anyways, just launch up into space and take a step out. It'd be kind of cool.
No, man, I would go out that way. We were talking about it the other day. Jenny and I were talking and she's like, you'd be okay if you got hit by a bunch of Legos and it just got like you suffocated. I'm like, no, I would not be okay. I love Legos. I'm not going to be okay suffocating from Legos.
Well, they say being in space is like getting hit with a bunch of Legos. So hopefully you'll be okay.
Well, yeah, it's a very similar experience.
Nice. I'm so glad that my worlds are colliding. This is amazing. All right, Christian, what else you got?
Well, it may not be Jeopardy, but we are going to see LeVar Burton host a game show. Burton has teamed up with Canadian entertainment company E1 to develop a TV game show adaptation of the classic board game Trivial Pursuit. He will host and executive produce the project via his own production banner, LeVar Burton Entertainment. And of course, this comes after he guest hosted Jeopardy and was one of the candidates considered to take on permanent hosting duties for the show. After his stint, Burton told Trevor Noah on The Daily Show during an interview that he was looking for the right game show to host, and it looks like he may have found it.
Hasn't this been done before?
A couple of times. So you had Trivial Pursuit on the Family Channel in 93, hosted by Wink Martindale, and they had like a kind of interactive 1-900 number element to it. And then you had a show called Trivial Pursuit America Plays, and it was hosted by Christopher Knight from the Brady Bunch. I think that was in like 2008 or 2009, where you had people submitting, like you could read a question and post it to YouTube, and they would use that video, like so like you would be asking the questions. It was kind of cool, but never really done effectively. It's, you know, for all the trivia that is involved in this game, it's proven pretty difficult to make a good game show out of it.
Well, hopefully this one will be successful. I do think it's great that someone has scooped him up, and I'm glad that it is something, you know, sort of
legitimate.
Yes. It's something that's going to have a name behind it, right? Like regardless of how well it does or has done in the past, the name Trivial Pursuit has clout behind it and, you know, funding, you know, above all other things.
This week in game show history, we are going back, way back to the ancient time of December 5th, 2005. And I love this show. This is when we got the first ever episode in America of this show on the Discovery Channel called Cash Cab.
Oh, hey.
Oh, I love cash cab. So, of course, the idea behind the show is that unsuspecting passengers get into a New York City taxi looking to go to their destination. Turns out they are on the set of a game show. They are asked questions by a smart aleck host who has all the questions, all the answers, all the money, and they walk out of the cab with cash if they can answer the questions correctly. Based on a British format, came to America, again, by way of the Discovery Channel, and Ben Bailey, stand-up comedian, was the host and taxi driver, actually went through New York City taxi cab driver training to get the job of hosting the show. I had the pleasure of working with one of the contestant coordinators on something unrelated about 10 years ago. And I asked if, you know, one of the big questions about cash cab was like, do they really know they're not going to be on a show? Like, is it really a surprise? And so I asked him, and he told me that what they used to do was they would scout people out on the street in New York, and they'd say, hey, you look like you'd be great to audition for our reality show. If you wait at this corner, we will have a cab pick you up and bring you to the studio. And that cab would be the cash cab. So that's how they used to pick contestants. It wasn't necessarily, you know, just off the street. I don't know what they would do if some drunk guy got into the cash cab without going through the process. But
Mike, do you want to take this or would you like me to?
Well, so we actually have done an interview with Beth Maluski, who was the host of Cash Cab Chicago, the second series of it. And so I would say if you want the answer to that question and many, many more, please go back to our Cash Cab episode and check out that interview.
Because in all honesty, Christian, she answered that exact question.
Indeed. Well, then I'm not going to say anything else about it. Go listen to it.
It's really a great interview, and Beth was absolutely wonderful. We actually pitched having her come back on our show, but she's in the process of finishing her graduate degree. Actually, she should be done by now.
I
should reach out again.
Totally forgot about that. We absolutely need to get the gears spinning on that again, because she was awesome, her little rant about Pyramid.
Yeah, so she's an improviser, Christian, and I'll bring you up to speed, because this did not make the episode. Here's some great behind-the-scenes stuff. And we talked, and she went off about Pyramid, like, when we were off the air, like, after the interview. And we actually did put a little bit of that in the interview. But she just ran it crazy. And Mike and I said, hey, man, what about if we did a spot that we could, like, spike in occasionally called To Tell the Truth Ski with Beth Maluski.
I was like, God, I know there was some cheesy ass name we
it
came up for.
Cheesy it was cheesy as hell, but
I
but it'd be
it.
Her coming oh, on, dude. It'd be her coming on as an improviser and just railing on whether it's old school or new school game show, but just giving her flat, blunt opinion about it.
I am so in for that. That sounds fantastic. I'm in for all things flat and blunt.
We have a lot of knives for you in the back room. All right, it's time for Stump or Chump. Christian, how are you feeling today?
I feel great.
That's funny, because that's not normally the answer we get when it comes to Stump or Chump. But Michael, are you ready to stump Mr. Carrion?
I am indeed. So, as we discuss later on, and you probably already know, that there is a specific age limit to American Idol's competition rules. 28 being the oldest contestant age allowable. Despite that rule, a contestant made it on air in front of the judges with the age being shown 20 as 28 in quotation marks, but in fact was 44 years old.
Oh.
What is the name of this one contestant who broke the rules of American Idol?
God, that's an impossible question. Holy cow. Go ahead, buddy.
Oh, geez. Well, see, we're talking about American Idol, and shows in that sort of area are not at all my strong suit.
Well, and they're not all that strong in the game show world, in our game show world, I should say, either.
So is this somebody I would know? You know, sometimes you have a celebrity come and, like, for fun, sort of.
Yeah, I don't really know how to answer that. I did not know them, but I also didn't know, like, any of the winners outside of, like, Kelly Clarkson. So
I want to say if I recall correctly, and I don't know if this is a hint or not, but I want to say that this person had something. There was a special reason why this person was allowed to compete at 44.
Now, see, I don't have that information, but I have to imagine that there is something, right? Because that big of a disparity, like, there is obviously...
Right. Yeah, I mean, that's going against the entire show rules, which they have to, like, hang on to, and there's lawyers and all the other crap. I mean, Christian could tell you about, since the game show scandals, how ridiculous it's gotten in terms of regulating games.
Well, and also on the, you know, I guess, other end of that, he got unanimously negative feedback and was immediately eliminated. So it wasn't even like he affected the overall outcome of the show. So, yeah, I mean, obviously it had to be some sort of gimmick or special circumstances or something. I did not find any more information other than this thing existed. So there you go.
Thank you both for buying me so much time. I have absolutely no idea the answer to this question. I have absolutely no idea. You know what my guess was going to be? Before I asked if it was somebody famous or not, my guess, and this is just taking into account the age, 44, and it was in quotation marks, whatever, I was thinking Big Bird or somebody like of that caliber that kind of like went up to audition just for fun. Do you know what I mean?
Gotcha.
It's not Big Bird, is it?
No, the name is Joseph Land.
Well, now who the hell is that?
Man, okay, so there's an American Idol fandom wiki, and it does not have an explanation for it. It just says, Joseph Land auditioned in Las Vegas. He claimed he was 28 during his audition. Simon did not believe him. He sang Young Girl by Gary Puckett and The Union Gap. After he finished singing, he finally admitted that he was actually 44, leading to the judges clapping because he finally told the truth. Because he was overage, the judges did not have a verdict.
Yeah, which means they basically like washed him
out. Just eliminated.
But here's the thing. In order to get in front of those judges, as Mike and I will discuss here, you have to pass through like one level of like qualifications to get there.
Right.
And I mean, I know the producers have a great big part of that. And I wonder if they just said, hey, let's go ahead and get this 44-year-old who claims to quote-unquote be 28 in front of them.
Right? Like, it may just be a thing where, like, he had the balls to show up at the audition and just be like, yeah, I'm 28. And they'd be like, really? Yeah, I'm 28.
Because I'm sure you've got to show some sort of ID. You've got to sign all of the paperwork.
Right, especially to get on air.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. There's a whole thing of ineligible contestants on the American Idol Wiki, which at some point I'm going to have to go through and read. Well, Christian, I'm sorry you got stumped there, but it's a pretty far out there stump.
It is. It was a good question. I'm proud to have been stumped by that question. And that's probably a reason why American Idol doesn't air the show your driver's license round anymore.
No, you know, that and the fact that they eliminated that round and also the Mother's Maiden Name round got eliminated as well.
That's true. That's a streaming exclusive now, I think.
It is, yeah, but you got to pay for that, and it's a lot of money. All right, so American Idol is our show this week, Christian. What's your thoughts on the game changer that it was?
I mean, it was definitely a game changer, sort of brought about the whole reality competition type show that we have dozens and dozens and dozens of today. I mean, I was never a huge fan of it. It never really fit in with my idea of what a game show was, but you can't deny the entertainment value of it and the fact that it's brought about so many celebrities. I mean, Kelly Clarkson has her own talk show now. She was the first American Idol winner. I mean, talk about a launch pad for stardom.
Real quick, if we had gone with my first thought of Stump or Chump question, which would have been basically there's no way for you to fail. How many in order winners can you name?
Oh, God.
Oh, one. I can name one. Okay. That's what I got.
Kelly Clarkson.
Yep.
Yeah. Okay. That's kind of what I thought. I was like, it's either going to be a thing where like he can go for a while or he's going to know Kelly Clarkson and then just give up.
Christian, Mike and I talk a lot more about this in our third segment about the idea that it was a breaker of television. It broke television for a small period of time there. And for that, it has to be recognized. And it is a reality show. It is not a full game show. It's a reality competition show, which falls under the wing of game shows, unfortunately.
Oh, sure.
Or fortunately, for that matter.
I mean, it's a show with a game in it, right? It is a competition. It's not, you know, it's not Wheel of Fortune, but there's definitely people competing for a thing.
Yeah.
There is indeed. And it's also a skill that I do not have.
Oh, same here.
Oh, well, as people have heard on this very podcast, it is not a skill I have either.
Actually, I don't know, Mike. You've done really well singing on this podcast. I mean, yes. Maybe we should do a Mike Jacobs sings, you know, the classics.
Sings the hits. 12 swinging groovy tunes with Mike Jacobs.
Dude, the first one we'll start with is Never Gonna Give You Up, and we'll leave it at that.
Ooh, nice. I would be able to do You Must Have Been a Beautiful Baby by Bobby Darin. I do know that.
Nice.
I do know that entire song.
I think we've kept Christian long enough. Christian, how about a plug for Buzzer Blog?
I thought I was in the wrong podcast for a minute. BuzzerBlog.com, the number one game show website in the world. Whether you're looking for information on new series, returning series, casting, anything relating to the worlds of game shows and unscripted entertainment, including American Idol, when and if the time is right. BuzzerBlog.com is the place to go.
What kind of information you got on Bobby Darin?
I'll have to look that one up.
Jeez. All right, Christian, thanks so much, my friend. We'll see you next week. And oh, happy Thanksgiving, by the way.
Happy Thanksgiving to both of you. Thank you guys so much.
All right, and if you have a question for Stump or Chump, please feel free to send it, as always, via the website, which is tellthemwhatthey'vewon.com with the spelled inappropriately contraction.
I like that it took us nearly 60 episodes to acknowledge that.
That's fine. There's just no apostrophe and tell them what they've won. It's right. Fine. It's a contraction. It's just not phonetically or grammatically correct.
There's a podcast group called Something Else, and it's something without the G. And they have to say it every time. And I'm like, did they not plan this out before naming their company that you can't just say something else on audio and expect people to find it?
Well, and I guess, you know, the other thing is like, I thought about also getting the website Tell Them What They Have One.
As a backup, case, just in case.
You know what I'm saying? Or getting the one with the apostrophe in it, just in case now, people in other ways.
I don't know that the one with the apostrophe would exist, because I don't know you can have that kind of special character in a URL.
I don't know. I don't. I know you can have numbers and letters, and I don't know what else. So
hyphens?
The hyphens, maybe? I don't know. There it is. Yes, you can definitely have hyphens, because my father-in-law owns a website called, like savings-online-something.com.
Yeah, you know, so I use mail-tester.com every day for work. So
mail tester, cool. I like
it. Yeah, thrilling.
I use pirate-ship.com.
Oh, yes, I'm familiar
with
Pirate
there's
Ship.
No dash in there, I don't think. I think it's just Pirate Ship.
I don't know. I'm familiar with it, but
until we get a deal with any of those websites, I will pronounce their website totally wrong every time.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, go ahead and just bleep all those out in post, because we don't want to give any accidental.
We're not giving any free
promotions.
I love it. All right, we're doing American Idol this week. Mike, what's your thought? First initial thought.
It is a juggernaut, and I will let the folks at home determine whether they want to give that a good connotation or a bad connotation.
I agree. It is definitely, and I'm glad we're doing all of these towards the end of this season, because these are like the shows that definitely affected television in general, and sometimes life in general.
Yeah, and like I always knew the size and impact of this show, but I guess I'd never really considered it in the scale of what it was. And so, yeah, like the impact and what this show did to television culture as a whole is massive.
It is, and we're going to talk more about it. Coming up in just a few minutes, we are going to handle the play. Is it really gameplay for this one? I mean, I guess there is. But
I mean, they're playing a game of sorts. But yeah, I mean, we'll probably go through that part pretty quickly. You know, people.
Well, then
we
may dump right into history without taking another break. Then.
Yeah, I mean, we have a ton to talk about in history. So
great.
We'll make it work.
We'll make it work. Mike, take us out, buddy.
You've been listening to America's favorite game show podcast. Tell them what they've won.
Hello.
I'm Nikki, a gaming noob.
And I'm Eric, a lifelong gamer.
And
we are
Press Any Button. Press Any Button is a video game podcast hosted by two married gamers for all experience levels.
In each episode, we cover a different video game's past, present, and future while adding a fun twist.
That's right. We present game challenges to each other, and if it's not accomplished, that person must show off their best rapping skills.
So if you like the podcast you're listening to right now,
be sure to find us on Spotify or wherever you listen to podcasts.
And there it is, the intro to American Idol, our featured show this week on America's favorite game show podcast, Tell Them What They've Won. I'm Tom Bassett, alongside of me, Mike Jacobs. Mike, it is the time where you take us into the gameplay of our featured show.
Yeah, well, so like I say, we're very back-heavy with history and impact of this show. So we're going to kind of go through the gameplay pretty quickly here. I think most people are aware of American Idol, but the idea is that they could select contestants aged 15 to 28, and they compete against each other in a singing competition. More or less, there are sort of three tiers to this competition. So the first of which none of us ever see. Basically, everybody and their mom auditions for this show, right? Anyone who can sing or thinks they can sing wants to be a part of this show.
That would be a very young mom at 28 years of age.
Good point. Forgot about that. Everyone and their future mom is auditioning for this show. So, yeah, I mean, what I'm saying is there are, what, tens of thousands, maybe hundreds of thousands of contestants that enter this thing. And so the first sort of round of all this is like the almost what would be auditions for a normal game show, right? Are you even going to make it to the show? The second
the culling of the herd, if you will.
Exactly. And so the second phase is also that, but it is the televised version. So to even get to that second phase where you get to stand in front of real judges takes a lot. You got a lot against you. And then so even at that point, obviously, as we've seen many, many times, they will pick people who they think will be funny or fail spectacularly. So getting picked to go to that point, not only does it not guarantee you that you're going anywhere, but it may not even guarantee you that you have a shot of going anywhere, right? Like they may be doing the what was that? Dangerous Liaisons or isn't that what that is, where they try and pick the worst people to bring to the party sort of thing?
Something like that. Yeah.
Anyways, you know, you're kind of getting almost used a little bit in that sense. But so anyways, you go through this competition where, you know, they have you sing songs in front of the judges, which vary over the years. And they critique and eliminate those who they feel do not deserve to be professional singers. And the rest advance. And then they go on to what is essentially the third phase. And that is where the public votes. American Idol, right? We want to know what America thinks of these people. So through...
Right.
Call in, text messaging, internet voting. We the people ultimately determine who's going to win the American Idol competition. And the winner very much wins. They get a music contract. They basically get the fast track to superstardom. That being said, I looked at the list of all the American Idol winners, and there were really only two names I knew on there. That's probably a lot on me, more so than it is this show. But it does seem that winning is not necessarily what's going to be your key to success. There are also a lot of runners-up that became famous and just contestants. So, you know, winning isn't everything, as weird as that sounds and as trite as it is. It's beyond just the triteness of it. It's literally true for this show.
Right, right. It's so interesting because did you watch this at all, Mike, when it first came out?
I don't want to say no because, like, how do you not? But I didn't follow it, that's for sure.
I didn't watch, like, all the way through to the Justin and Kelly thing that, you know, where they were the last two and then Kelly won and blah, blah, blah. I didn't watch any of that. I watched, like, the first episode and saw Simon destroying people. And I was like, and click, that's it for me.
Yes.
And I was gone.
Very much
and
agree with
now,
that.
Now, I definitely followed it in terms of, like, knowing who was in, knowing who wasn't in. Like, you know, I obviously would, like, somebody would come on the radio and I'd be like, man, I like this. And someone would go, they were on American Idol. I go, really? Wow, they're fantastic. You know, like, But, I mean, it just was not... singing shows were never my thing anyway. And so neither are dancing shows or any of those other competition shows. So I'm not really a huge fan of this to begin with. But anyway, I mean, yes, I would agree that winning is definitely not everything here.
Yeah, and it was, well, we kind of touch on that a little bit as well in Top Chef, right? Where, like, the, you know, if you make it to a certain point in the show, you're going to make a name for yourself.
Right.
Now, jumping back to what you were saying about Simon, that is a big aspect of this show, is like him being mean to people. And
that's why the producers pick all the bad people
exactly,
to be on television,
exactly,
so that he can lambaste them.
Like, I do not like that. And we talked about this a little bit in the Gong Show episode, in the sense that the Gong Show sort of does the same thing, but it doesn't, it allows the contestant to make themselves the joke, right? The Gong Show is not making fun of people. It is saying you are doing something ridiculous and we'll get you out of here quickly, but that's the idea. Simon is a straight up jerk to people, and like it goes, I think, a step beyond, in my opinion.
Yeah, and we'll talk more about that in our final thoughts, because obviously there's a huge conversation to be had there.
Yeah,
and I definitely want to give my opinion on that as well. But I agree with you. I think that it definitely is more beyond anything in any other show, and I also think that was part of the appeal of it in the very beginning too.
Yeah, no, that's absolutely true. Was to see like, oh, what is Simon going to say about this person? But yeah, I mean, that's basically it, right? That is the gameplay. You start with this massive pool of people who want to be a singer, and they go through this audition process, and America right. ends up choosing who the next idol is. So like I said, we got a lot to go through. So if we're cool, let's just go ahead and jump right into history. Does that work for you?
That works for me. Let's do it.
Right on. Premiered on Fox on June 11th, 2002, and of course hosted by radio personality Ryan Seacrest. Also, comedian Brian Dunkelman was a part of the first season.
I'm sorry, who?
Right? I totally forgot about him, that he even existed. His Wikipedia says best known for hosting American Idol. Considering he did so for one season, that probably means he's not doing a whole lot these days. Brian, if you're a listener, I apologize, but your career is not doing so hot.
All right, that's fine. He's doing more than me, what I did.
You know what? At the end of the day, he's got it on me. I'm sure he's got tons more money than I do.
Sure.
So this is based on a British show called Pop Idol, which was created by Simon Fuller, not the Simon we were referring to earlier, who is Simon Cowell.
Right.
That in turn was inspired by actually a New Zealand television series called Pop Stars. This all got its start in New Zealand.
Cool.
Like we said, Brian left after the first season, and Seacrest will stay on as host for the remainder of the show throughout its entire run, or both runs, technically. Right. The original judges, and they hang out for the first eight seasons. We got producer and music manager Randy Jackson, of course, classic Paula Abdul, and then Simon Cowell, the, sharp-tongued British gentleman who likes to cut everybody down.
Right.
Over the years, the judges rotate. I did not keep track of when and where each one becomes, but the list of judges outside of those three, Cara Diogardi, I don't know who that
okay.
is, Ellen okay. DeGeneres, Jennifer Lopez, Steven Tyler of my least favorite band in the world, Aerosmith, Mariah Carey, Nicki Minaj, Keith Urban, Harry Connick Jr., Luke Bryan, Katy Perry, and Lionel Richie. Not too shabby of a lineup for the people.
No, I mean, actually, those are all really big stars.
Yeah.
And I will tell you, I will now make sure to sneak in an Aerosmith song into our music league at least once a week.
Oh, well, we'll get no points from me. I can tell you that for sure.
Okay, great.
All right. Check us out. The first episode, first one ever, drew 9.9 million viewers.
Whew. Wow.
And this was the best viewership for that time slot in over a year for Fox. And I mean, again, the first show, the very first show. So it wasn't like there. I mean, obviously there was hype leading up to it, but there wasn't like established name behind it. And then throughout the season, it just kept growing. By the finale, 23 million people had watched.
Wow.
And so season two, the premiere goes up even more, 26.5 million viewers. This happens. This is January 21st, 2003, by the way. Third season starts January 19th, 2004. At this point, it becomes the top show in the 18 to 49 demographic, which, if you are aware of TV demographics, that is the honeypot. That's where all of the what they refer to as expendable income is held.
People are
professionals who aren't married, don't have kids yet. Obviously, once you reach 49, you're kind of past that, but still, you know, that's where the disposable income is. So that's what basically every television program wants to get, even the ones that are trying to skew older. Like, that's their, you know, the real money is in the 18 to 49. And it holds that that top spot in that demographic up to and including the 10th season.
Wow.
So that starts in the third season, right? Fourth season, again, I'm trying to just kind of go through rapid fire just because we got a lot.
Sure.
Fourth season is on January 18th, 2005. At this point, it has become the most watched series among all viewers on American TV. That is series, as in not just game show, all shows, American TV, not just Fox, not just primetime. Average episode viewership, 26.8 million people watching.
And Tom Bastick and Mike Jacobs are not two of them.
Right? here's the thing. We haven't even reached the peak yet. That happens in season 5. January 17th, 2006 is when that starts. The average viewership for episode of... the fifth season is 30.6 million people per episode.
That is incredible.
Right? That is literally the peak. It's the highest rated season. Let's see here. Season six. So this is it maintains that peak that it had in season five. And at this point, it's not so much the viewership, but this is really when it starts to what was described as reshaping television. Television networks referred to this show as the Death Star, meaning any show you put up against American Idol is going to fail because there's an average. That means there's more sometimes. An average of 30 million people watching this dang thing every week. So, I mean, you know, what you got to just at that point literally reshape your schedule. They are rearranging their schedules to avoid having their good shows up against American Idol.
Unbelievable.
Yeah. This is also when the Emmys start rolling in. Not just Emmys, but, you know, People's Choice Awards and all those different things. I did not list them all out. I think we could probably do an episode just on the awards that this show has won. So I wanted to just talk about the Emmys, though. We had several over the years of 2007, 8, 9, and 11. There are multiple in each of those years. I don't know what happened in 2010 that, you know, they just didn't make it or whatever, but...
Who knows?
It's also worth noting that, like I said, it won several Emmys over those years, and it was nominated for, like, the outstanding reality show or whatever, the basically best in show of Emmys for reality show, nine different times, but it never won.
Wow.
Probably because Top Chef was winning it so often.
Yeah, exactly.
So, where are we? We are in season six, now going into season seven, and this is when things... start to maybe become a little ominous. This ratings drop was very, very slow at first. But one of the, I guess, big red flags for the show was that with the seventh season, they start to see that the results episodes are getting higher viewership than the competition episodes. In other words, people are just turning in to see who won, right?
Mm-hmm.
They're not actually watching the competition, which maybe you could make the argument that that is having the ripple effect of people that are winning these later seasons are maybe literally just popularity contests and has nothing to do with their talent whatsoever.
Yeah, there you go.
So where are we? We do see an occasional spike in ratings over this. This is the next few seasons. What I guess we're at 7, 8, 9, and 10 is the span that I'm talking about here.
Right.
Nothing reaches the sort of height that we saw in 6 and 7. What was it? Yeah. 5 and 6.
5 and 6.
Yes,
yeah.
Sorry. But... it's not doing bad, but there is a consistent downward trend, and that's, you know, what you want to look for, right? Is it not just like what is today versus yesterday, but what is the last 3 days versus these same 3 days last month, right? And so there is a downward trend overall. Not only that, that 18 to 49 key demographic starts to dwindle and shift up to that next demographic older. We are seeing a older and also less diverse audience watching this show. In other words, by the end of the 10th season, it's just a bunch of old white people watching.
Oh, God.
I may be editorializing a little bit there, but that's the general idea.
I understand what you're saying. Yeah.
That is a major factor into the ratings drop of this show. Because as we will talk later, the youth of this country handle pop culture. Right, like that's just a fact that we have to accept as old people.
Absolutely.
We don't have the influence anymore.
You're right. Rarely does that ever happen that the older folks set a pop trend.
Yeah, exactly. So we now come into season 11. This is on January 18th, 2012. This is when that slow decline really turns into a decline. Viewership is down 21%, which, you know, 21% may not sound huge, but when you're talking about 30 million people, that is a large number just shifting out of there, right? And of that 21% drop in ratings, it is largely in that key demographic. That is now the fastest falling demographic of the show's ratings. Then we go into season 12, which started January 16th, 2013. We drop another 23% in total average viewers.
Wow.
So, this thing is just hemorrhaging at this point. Season 14, Coca-Cola leaves as sponsor. And that to me is the sort of Balkan powder keg of this show, where it's just like, okay, Fox starts doing what I referred to as their trademark episode mashups. If you remember, Arrested Development had 4 episodes left before it was supposed to be canceled when Fox had it, and then they aired all 4 of those episodes in one night with very little advertising. This is a thing Fox does, right? Like, once they get the idea that a show is done, they're like, let's just get this thing out of here as quickly as we can so we can move on. And then they announced that after they start doing this, they announced the next season will be the last. This is season 15 now. And it does see a bit of a boost. I'm guessing probably because of the whole, last season.
Exactly. Yeah, absolutely.
It's not much, to help them out. Obviously not enough to keep them or to convince them to go back on saying it's the last episode, not enough to save it, not enough to really even do much to move the needle. And eventually we do end on April 17th, 2016. And while we did see a very steep decline in those last few seasons, it is worth noting that we started with 30.6 million viewers, right? This is the first ever, it says first ever, I can't imagine there's anyone else who's done this since, but program on Fox to conclude a run with every season being in the top 30 most watched television shows. And again, that is television shows overall. Every season of American Idol is in the top 30. So even those seasons that did quote unquote terrible, they're still killing it by television standards.
Right.
After Fox ends it, it kind of goes back and forth, the rights. There's some question as to who had it. There were some legal disputes and whatnot. It gets sort of passed around from hand to hand. people are obviously interested in owning it, but nothing's really happening with it until it lands into the hands of ABC, and they decide to start a revival on March 11th, 2018, which is officially logged as the 16th season. It's not a new season of a revival. It is a continuation of the original one. We do indeed have Ryan Seacrest returning as host, and I mentioned these earlier, but we have Katy Perry, Luke Bryan, and Lionel Richie as the judges, and this version is still running. The 20th season was announced May this year, and the hosts and judges that I just mentioned are all going to be returning in their roles. Apparently, the ratings on this one are not stellar. They're not. I mean, they're nowhere even close to what American Idol was in its heyday.
Right.
But I think the key is that it's consistent, right? Like, the original run of American Idol was this meteoric rise and fall, and this is, I think it's fairly, you know, level, so it's a safe bet, right? It's not knocking down any doors, but it's doing well enough to continue going. So,
and I wonder, you and I should talk about this in the final thoughts, but I wonder what the budget is for something like this. Like, is this an expensive show to put on or a not-so-expensive show to put on, you know?
Well, so I would think that a lot of the budget is production, because the prizes are more or less funded by the record labels that are, you know, they're signing these people. They're getting the contestant who wins, they get a record deal for, I think it's 6 albums, and then they get management through a... company. The company's called 19 Management, and it says they're American Idol affiliated. I don't know exactly what that means.
They get funneled talent from American Idol. That's what that means.
Yeah, well, exactly. And so that's the thing, is they do get right of first refusal, which is fancy legal term for saying nobody else can sign them until they say no. So no, in other words, absolutely. If you know, Kelly Clarkson wins the first season, they don't have to sign her, but nobody else can until they make their decision.
Correct.
And so, yeah, you know, you're getting an advance on the contract of $250,000, $250,000, and which dropped over the years, by the way. But again, this is, I don't know how much of this is supplied by the labels and management companies versus like the Fox execs, right? So it kind of depends on what you're talking about when you want to say what the budget of this show is.
Sure.
I will say that prior to the 9th season, every winner had earned over $1 million in their first year. First year after winning, obviously.
Right, but that could be from record sales.
Exactly, that's touring. What I'm saying.
So that doesn't cost the production.
That's exactly my point. Like, I think that the production is kind of getting away with murder, right? Like, the fact that, like, we've talked about this in the past, where shows can be very successful because they're not expensive to make. I kind of think this was both, right? Like, this was not expensive to make and had the biggest viewership of all time, basically. So, I mean... I don't know the details of how they balance the books on this, but considering right. there's not like, it's not like Millionaire. You don't get a check for $1 million from the people that make the show. You get a record
right.
deal. And so,
right.
yeah, they gotta be they have to be saving money on that.
I'm sure they're paying the celebrities a ton of money to be the judges. I get that, but still.
Oh, I mean, yeah. That's
at it. At the end of the day, I mean, come on.
That has to be the biggest cost of this
expense
show.
That they have. Yeah, it'd be interesting to see the line by line budget for this, wouldn't it? Though.
Yeah, absolutely.
Hey, this is a great place. Why don't we take a quick break and come back, and then we'll talk the remainder of history and final thoughts. How's that?
Yes. There's a lot more to dive into. So, yeah, let's take a quick break.
I love it. All right. We'll be back right after this. You've been listening to America's favorite game show podcast. Tell them what they've won.
The K camera zooms in on me.
So we get some high proof alcohol. We get gasoline. Anything that says
what makes our lives worth living is our mortality. If there were not mortality, we wouldn't be
passionate. Luckily for me, most of the beauty pageants that I've participated in don't.
I've done my fair share of blood, man.
I've always liked showing myself off naked.
Got up out of the seat, walked to me, and then slapped me.
Spontaneous conversation with people from around the world on Stranger Than Christian, available on your favorite podcast app and at strangerthanchristian.com.
And welcome back. It's episode number 58, season number 3, and gosh, we're 2 away from the end of season 3. It's America's favorite game show podcast, Tell Them What They've Won. Mike, we're so close to the finale. Another little teaser for the finale?
Oh, yeah, we...
Maybe, if you want to?
No, yeah, we... Well, like I said last week, we have typically ended our seasons with a big collection of episodes under a theme. That theme has not been talked about, though we have talked about shows that are adapted from that theme.
Oh, okay, so that's a little bit closer. I like indeed, it. Indeed. I like it.
But yeah, this week we are talking American Idol.
If you are
saying reality competition shows are game shows, then I would say this is the most successful game show of all time.
Yeah, but I mean, this is a subgenre of game shows is what it really is more than anything.
So you're saying it's not a game show? Is that kind of what you're
saying? I'm saying it's a subgenre of the genre.
Right. So it could be
Science fiction is considered fiction, is it not?
Yes, but if you were to say that... Oh, okay. All right. I was going to say if you were to say that science fiction is the best fiction, but there could be fiction that is better that is not science fiction.
That is correct.
But it would still be the most successful game show, right? Because
it's a reality game show. But yeah, it's probably the most successful in terms of ratings, anyway. Jesus,
yeah.
But in terms of overall grossing money, it's tough to say too, because like this hasn't been around for but 20 years, and like other game shows have been around like Price is Right forever.
That's a good point. Ratings are not the end all be all of.
I'm not a big fan of using terms like best of all time, greatest. You know, et cetera, et cetera, except for America's favorite game show podcast.
I mean, that goes without saying. But no, I kind of agree with you. I tend to do so very hyperbolically, like, oh, dude, that is the greatest thing of all time. You know, we'll have a conversation about movies, and I'll say it about 4 movies in the 20-minute span, you know?
Sure.
So, yeah, sure. I definitely don't like it saying it as a declarative. But But let's get back to American Idol, right? So despite the fact that this is like... whether you want to say it's the most popular game show of all time. It is hugely popular. It has a huge amount of influence, has a huge amount of success.
It spun so many spinoffs of like shows that were similar and ripoffs.
Oh, I mean, it started the singing competition genre.
Oh,
like The Voice.
I mean, now we have all these stupid, what is it, Avatar and all these.
Yeah, The Masked Singer. What was the talent show, America's Got Talent? All that stuff is born off
of this. And the Dancing with the Stars and all the other ones, that's all because of this.
100%.
So if you hate any of those shows as much as Tom Bastek, you have this show to blame.
Well, so let's talk about that hate for a minute, right? Because it is not without it. So what I wanted to start with is a quote from Carla Peterson of the San Diego Union Tribune, where she called it, quote, a conniving multimedia monster, end quote, and that it has resulted in, quote, a lump of reconstructed evil, unquote. Now, I mean, first of all, no offense, Carla Peterson of the San Diego Union Tribune, but who the hell are you, right? You're one person.
Million people are watching it. Whether you think it's crap or not, it's making money.
But I do think she's bringing up an idea here that is not lost and is personally what my beef of the show is, that the show is going for the lowest common denominator. There's also a concept known as art by committee, or you may have heard it as, you know, blank by committee. The idea being, you know, you try to get something that appeals to everybody, and you end up with something that is appealing to nobody. Now, obviously, that's not the case here because it's appealing to 30.6 million people, but I do think that it's something worth discussing, right? Because, like we said, these are people who are not necessarily earning their spot in superstardom, right? It's art by committee. And what I really wanted to bring up with that concept is there's a thing called the most unwanted song.
Okay.
And we can post a link to this on our blog, and people can go and listen to it. But basically, it's a I don't want to say a science experiment, but a science project, whatever you want to call it, where these science musicians or whatever, they legitimate scientists, by the way, they did this massive study on what music people liked and didn't like. And that by that, I don't just mean like what genre, what artist, whatever, but also like what instruments, how are they played, what length of
was
song.
There a hook in the song, was there not a hook in the
exactly
song?
Like very 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 nuanced points of what makes quote unquote good music and bad music, or
sure,
you know, appealing versus unappealing music. And they ended up composing two songs. There is the most wanted song and the most unwanted song. When you go and listen to these, now I am by no means saying that the most unwanted song is good. But it's interesting and kind of fascinating to listen to. And the most wanted song is just flatline garbage, right? And again, it's the idea of you are watering everything down to such this like minute detail of this is what people want, and you're losing like the sort of soul of what it is. And honestly, if you ask me, I think the reason why the most unwanted song ends up working and being a more interesting listen is because it's made from such disparate elements. By the way, if you look it up, the genre is experimental opera polka. And so in order to make these just super disparate elements work together, it probably took a little bit more time and care and attention, right? As opposed sure. to a song that's like, oh, we want a 4/4 beat and white guy
yeah, 1/3, 5/7, yeah, blah,
together.
Blah, blah.
Exactly,
yeah.
Exactly. You could just throw that together. So I think that maybe amount of efforts can go into that. But to summarize all this, the idea here is that this is what American Idol is doing, right? We are not finding the literal creme de la creme. We're finding the one thing, the one through line that appeals to those 30.6 million people. And in doing so, we're ending up with and I kind of said this earlier, right? We're ending up with a musician who is just bland, right? And I don't want, again, we're getting into the realm of opinion a little bit, and I don't sure. want to talk bad about music that people enjoy. But at the end of the day, I think it's safe to say that there's no American Idol winner that pushed the boundaries of music, right?
No, because they're looking for the hook. I mean, that's exactly what it comes down to. Like when I was in radio, and I was a radio disc jockey for 12 years, and you know this, is that when we would listen to music, I could tell you after being in radio for 5 or 6 years what songs were going to make it on the radio and what songs weren't going to make it on the radio. Because basically, it's like you were looking for a certain vibe, a certain hook, a certain like likability, a certain, there was just a certain je ne sais quoi, if you will, that I knew. I mean, I used to do a thing at night called the 11 o'clock buzz, and I would pick 5 songs, and it was really cool because my program director just dished me a whole desk full of what was about to come out in the next 2 to 3 weeks. It was being released from all kinds of bands. And I got to pick through it and play the 5 that I thought were going to be the new thing. And I would start with those 5, and then as we went on through the week, I would incorporate new ones and weed out old ones as old ones got picked up. Dude, I have more records hanging on the wall in Savannah, Georgia, for being the first to play songs that went big in the country.
Well,
because
right.
I just played the stuff that I liked, that I thought was hooky and was going to be cool and be on the radio, and because the masses liked it, it became a silver, gold, platinum record, whatever. You know what I'm saying? I mean, like...
right. And because, again, you're sort of hitting that mass appeal, right?
Exactly right. Now, none of that ever pushed the boundary. right. ever.
And what's interesting, though, is I remember, I mean, obviously I remember listening to the radio, but I mean, like, the radio was a big part of my life for a very long time, listening to new music. And I could, like, take you, now, I mean, obviously I listened to the stuff that was big radio hit and, like, oh, the Oasis, I love this, you know, that kind of stuff. But, like, what really stood out to me were the sort of boundary pushing weird songs that made you stop and go like, oh, what, like, what is this? That is totally different than anything I've ever seen. It grabs your attention, right? And I think that's, I mean, you know me, I listen to all sorts of like wild, crazy music. And I think that's why things like this don't appeal to me, because I'm not looking for, you know,
the hooky shit.
Well, I am. I'm just saying, well, hang on. Let me rephrase this. It's not that I don't appreciate the hooky stuff. I do, and I like just as much, you know, standard pop music probably as anyone else. I just don't choose to listen to it mostly. I have no real issue with it. It's not what I'm seeking out. And so the idea of watching a competition show to see who can most accurately portray this style of music that I don't seek out to begin with just doesn't hold any appeal to me.
Absolutely. I feel the exact same way. And that's why I think you and I didn't watch it.
Right. And if you were to do the inverse of, you know, America's next best black metal band, like, nobody's going to watch it, right? Like, so it's a fine line to walk in a way. That, you know, you want to get 30.6 million people watching every episode, but the art suffers because of that.
But I have to be honest with you, Mike. None of these studios give a flying crap about the art. They give a crap about the business. That is all this
absolutely,
is.
Absolutely. I make no argument against that. That is absolutely true.
I mean, we're not going to have America's next vaporwave band. You know what I'm saying? No, I mean, it's just not happening.
It's not going to happen. And that's fine. I mean, that honestly, I would argue that, like, I mean, I brought up black metal and the whole thing about black metal is being, like, individualistic and against culture. So that would literally never happen just because the nature of the genre. But,
correct.
You know, I would say nobody wants that, even fans of the genre, right? You're absolutely right. Like, it's all about execs, what money they can make. They are not caring about the fact of what they do to the art form. Now, there is also a bit of an argument that is made or was made, I suppose. I can't imagine it's being made too much anymore. But just that the idea that we are now, I guess, putting pop culture in the hands of these teenage girls who are voting on American Idol online and may not be necessarily the best judges of talent or art. And again, you know, maybe that's not the goal, but it could, in theory, be harming to the, you know, sort of music culture as a whole.
I'm gonna choose to disagree with you on that, because I feel like because of the internet and the way that we explore music now is so much totally different than turning on the radio or turning on American Idol. I will tell you that I stumble across American Idol artists, and sometimes I really like him. Philip Phillips is fantastic.
I did not know he was an American Idol winner until this morning. And yes, I like Philip Phillips very much.
But here's the thing. My listening has nothing to do with Philip Phillips being on American Idol.
Agreed.
I just happened to stumble across him one day, and I was like, man, who is this guy that sounds just like Dave Matthews? Like, let's look him up. And I'm like, my God, he was on American Idol. Holy cow.
Right.
But, I mean, what I'm saying is I think that we're in a different place with the art in terms of what's out there. Because I'll tell you what I listen to, I would never have been able to listen to 20 years ago. It was just not around. It was not available to me without seeking out crazy hidden stuff. You know what I'm saying?
Right. And so that's the thing, is I was doing that a lot as a kid, like spending time specifically trying to find go as far out as I could just to see what was there. And so that's like, that's where my head is at. And so that's why I like to see the forwarding of the art. But the at the end of the day, yes, you're absolutely correct that it is easier for those who are like me that want to explore and find new things can do so much easier now with the internet. They don't have the, like, quote unquote struggle that I had, you know, a poor, you know, rich white kid made, can't find the weird music that he's looking for. But you know what I mean? But I don't think that that is necessarily equivalent to the impact of pop culture that American Idol has.
Well, I mean, yes. Okay. I agree with you, but I will also say that what the radio did in terms of, like, throwing, you know, with payola and everything else about throwing songs down your throat that the record labels wanted to promote was the same thing that American Idol does on a mass, you know, a mass spectrum kind of thing. You know,
right,
what I'm saying?
Right. But see, the difference is the stuff that I grew up with, I liked. So now I have to hate new stuff. No, I'm just kidding. But no, I do want to make the point, though, that the idea of American Idol putting pop culture into the hands of teenage girls is absurd to me, because that is where pop culture has always been. I mean, correct, since the freaking Beatles, man. Like, teenagers run the world as far as pop culture goes. Like I said earlier, like, I'm going to be 40 soon. I have absolutely no influence on what the world is doing, right? Like, my purchasing of Dungeon Synth cassette tapes is by no means going to make Dungeon Synth a pop culture phenomenon.
No, it is not.
So I don't think that you can say that the audience of this show's either age or lack of, you know, artistic snobbery, for lack of a better term, because honestly, I do think that kind of opinion is a bit snobbish, but that the show is highlighting what has already been there is what I'm trying to get at. I kind of lost my train of thought there, but I don't think that argument holds much water, because it's something that's always been true and is not unique to American Idol.
I agree.
But finally, the last aspect of this kind of goes along with what you were saying about they're looking for the mass appeal, right? And part of the problem was that these winners of American Idol were not being welcomed into the community of entertainment professionals, the echelon of people who had made these previous records that are on your wall in the you know, radio station. They don't see these winners as having put in the hard work to earn what they have, right? Like I was saying earlier, that they're just winning this contract, right? Now, obviously, if right of first refusal, they can say no, all that kind of stuff. But, you know, it's not like someone it's so weird that the first two examples that popped into my head were Dolly Parton and Eminem. Like, what two different sides of the spectrum? But I think those are two people that really loved their craft and wanted to put their all into it, right? And they put the work, they hit the streets, and they did what was necessary to get to where they are. And you could make the argument that, you know, Johnny American Idol winner did not.
I could make the argument that you need to go and research your American Idol people and see how hard they worked in the music industry up until the point they got on American Idol. Because a lot of them are not like newbies to the music industry. They're not like Joe Schmo out the backyard deciding to sing. It's somebody who's like been a musician, can play guitar, has been touring around for the last 2 years, and finally got on American Idol and got the exposure that they needed.
Sure. Sure. Well, okay. I'm
not saying everyone is like that either. So
no. Yeah. Yeah. And that's the other thing, is these are all very broad brush arguments. And I do also want to clarify, I am not making this argument. This is another one I don't necessarily agree with. But I did read that there were some very outspoken people about this, specifically Elton John, Usher, and Leanne Rimes. Also Sheryl Crow. But that was weird because she also worked on the show at one point. So I don't know what happened there. But again, this is not necessarily something I'm perpetuating as a true statement, more that it is a thing, a thought that existed. I am more to agree with you. And the fact of the matter is, regardless of what you know, lump of reconstituted evil this show is pooping out, right? How many people auditioned for this? What I say, like, I mean, again, I made up tens of thousands, but it's got to be close to that if that's an exaggeration.
Sure.
And so, like, the people, you're not going to get up there if you're not someone who hasn't been practicing and putting in that effort, right? So while maybe the fact that they got a record label because they won a competition maybe fast-tracked their career a little bit, I don't think, again, you can't say by and large that American Idol is solely responsible for inexperienced people making it into superstardom before they've, you know,
like, earn their way there.
Right? Like, it happens all the time.
Dude, there is a ton of unfunny people that are in Hollywood right now.
Absolutely.
That are working as comedians.
Right.
Unfunny as hell.
I mean, look, if we want to start talking about that, we can bring up nepotism and talk Pauly Shore, right? Like, the only reason why that guy is famous is because of his parents.
Yeah, I mean, there's 100 reasons to get there. There's 100 ways to get there. My feeling is that this is just another way that people got there. And I'm sorry that Mr. Musician, who was out there selling 10,000 records out of the back of his car, or CDs out of the back of his car, to work his way up into the music business and get there, didn't have the same opportunity as someone that got on American Idol. That doesn't mean that person on American Idol is any less talented than the person
Absolutely.
Who sold 10,000 CDs out of the back of his truck.
Absolutely. And the other thing is that someone winning American Idol does not diminish the accomplishment that musician made selling 10. Like, that's freaking awesome and a, you know, accomplishment in and of itself. The fact that someone else had it a little easier does not mean that your difficult time was wasted, right?
Right.
So I don't know. Again, it's not an argument I'm trying to make. I'm just the reporter on this one.
Sure, I hear you.
So these next two points, I'm going to lump them together, and I'm going to read them as factually as possible. I feel like we need to proceed with caution because we are entering in a bit of, you know, difficult social subjects.
Okay. Which, yeah, we typically try to stay away from.
Exactly. We don't want to, you know, alienate any listeners. We are not making any judgments on people.
No,
we
try to be an inclusive podcast here.
Yes, indeed. Well, so that's where we go here. Throughout the series, and again, I'm reading these as factly as I can. These are facts, and then we will determine how much we want to editorialize based on these two facts. Throughout the series, 12 of the 17 winners, including the first 5 in a row, have all come from the southern United States.
Interesting.
For 5 consecutive seasons, starting in the 7th, which, as we recall, was actually the start of the downfall, the title was given to a white male playing the guitar. So I'm going to start with the second one here. As I mentioned once, and I honestly didn't put this together until right now, season 7 is when that demographic shift happens, right? Where we go away from that younger audience and go towards older people, and specifically white people.
So the older white people voted for white people playing guitar.
Yes. And then that same sort of idea, meaning, you know, sort of voting for your own, I think explains the fact that the Southerners are winning in, you know, disproportionate amounts.
I'd love to know what the breakdown of voting is. Like, how many people from the South voted for people from the South, or how many people from the North voted for people from the South? You know, like, I mean, it's tough to say that too.
I couldn't find that much of a breakdown where it was like literally those things, but that seems to be the idea, right? Is that in general, people from the South have a pride about their heritage and where they come from and the history, and that's something that they want to support. And the idea that voting for someone because they're from South Carolina is absolutely a thing that would happen. Voting for someone because they're from Oklahoma, significantly less likely to happen.
Oh, maybe. I will tell you that when I spent my 2 years in Minnesota, those people can tell you every single celebrity and athlete that is from Minnesota and what high school they went to. And I have never seen that before until I moved to Minnesota for 2 years. And then they would be like, oh, yeah, that Richard Dean Anderson there, don't you know, from MacGyver? Oh, yeah, I went to Roseville High School there. I'm like, how do you know that? I mean, I'm from New York. It's like, name three people that are from New York. I'm like, well, De Niro, Spike Lee. I mean,
Conan O'Brien, he was lived there for a minute.
Maybe,
I don't know.
I mean, I don't know. They know the high school. Like it.
Right.
So there is pride in other places besides the South.
Well, I guess that's a now that we're talking about it, I do remember my mom's family was big they all live in Indiana and they are big fans of the Seattle Supersonics because a player whose name escapes me at this time is
from Indiana.
Yeah.
You know,
so
I mean,
yeah, maybe that's not so much an argument to be made. I just feel like the idea of Southern pride is kind of a trope, right?
Well, I mean, I guess it is, and the truth is, I hope everybody is as proud of the hometown that they came from as a lot of people are. There's some people that aren't proud of the hometown they came from, you know, or they moved around so much they didn't really have a hometown to come from, you know. Like,
right.
At the end of the day, look, these people voted for who they voted for. You know, as the demographics started to die off, the younger demographics started to die off, it's not surprising to me that the older white folk voted for a white guy playing guitar. Like, that doesn't surprise me.
Fair. I do think that's true. And especially since that, you know, the coincidence of, I'm not saying coincidence, I'm saying the two things happened at the same time, right?
Right.
Of the demographic shift and the, you know, white guys starting to win a lot is not surprising, right? It is a thing that coincided, and I don't think this is a correlation does not equal causation. I think it very much is. But again, I'm simply trying to underscore the idea that despite the just absolute insane success of this show, you and I are not alone in not being fans of it. And I feel like there is enough legitimate rationale, especially when it comes to the idea of, you know, sort of killing the art, for lack of a better phrasing. I didn't want to paint this show as all peaches and roses with tons of money rolling in. I really felt that this other side of the impact deserve talking about, you know.
Sure, absolutely. Let me also reiterate on the on that whole thing about whether it's race or diversity or whatever. I don't feel that any of that's right.
right.
But I don't think you do either. I think that's just something that we needed to say, and that it's out there, and it is the truth. And it's also, it's wrong, but it's there. There's nothing we can do about that.
Right. Right. And you know, it's, I don't even know if wrong is the right word, but I think it's worth taking note of, right? That
there you go. Even better
In this society where we are starting to take more note of, specifically, you know, racial inequalities, I think it is worth noting that, this is terrible phrasing of it, but left to their own devices, white people are going to stick with white people.
Oh, God. Yeah, I hear what you're saying. And I think let's end our talk on that.
Yes, let's please do. I don't think we need to go any further than that.
It's just terrible.
that may be the most political statement we've ever said on this show.
I mean, but the truth is that, it again, it's not my feeling and your feeling. It's just that is what these numbers that we have seen have shown.
Exactly.
And I can say it's wrong, or I can say it's sad. It's probably not wrong, but it's sad.
Maybe a little disappointing.
Yeah, and that's too bad. But it's funny enough, not the reason why I don't like the show. I don't like the show because they pick the bad people, because the producers want to go and humiliate people. I'm also concerned about this show because if you have a friend that's trying out for the show that can't sing worth a crap, why didn't you stop them from going on and making a fool of themselves on television?
That's
awful, especially in today's day and age where I understand you want to support your friends and family, and everybody needs support, and everybody needs that, and I agree with that. But to let them go on television and make a fool of themselves is awful. I mean, just awful. And the fact that they made that like a selling point, and they lambasted the contestants, That didn't work for me. I never liked the idea of idol being in the title, because to me, at 28 years of age, it's tough to find a lot of idols out there in America. You need some people that are a little bit older, that lived a little bit, to be an idol. So I understand it's just a title, but I was never a big fan of it. I also don't like the fact that winning isn't everything, because you know what? In a game show, winning is everything.
Well, I mean, aside from consolation prizes, but yeah, you're right that, you know.
If you're the champion, you're the winner. If you're right. Second place, you're going home with whatever you got. The take-home version. There it is. And then you're right. The show gets away with murder on the budget. They made money on this hand over fist, which, again, this is what they're doing, the network's doing. I can't hate the network or the show for this. But, again, it's like, wow, what an easy way for them to make a ton of money. You know, Ellen DeGeneres said it best. She was interviewed. There was an interview with Howard Stern. And DeGeneres said that being a judge was one of the worst decisions she ever made, because she found it extremely difficult to give honest feedback to the singers, especially when it was negative. She didn't want to break someone's heart. And let me tell you what, I agree with that. I think that's a wonderful thing. And I also feel like that reality television is about breaking people's hearts. Like, that's exactly what reality television is. It's about, like, we're going to pick you out as a loser, and we're going to say you're a loser. That's what reality television really comes down to. Reality television on The Bachelor isn't about who wins. It's about watching all those people lose and not get a rose on the way out.
No, I mean, you're absolutely right. Man, I had so many thoughts running through my head while you were talking about that. I want to go back to just summing up the idea of why I don't like this show, because I think I agree that a lot of, like, I am not saying it is a conniving multimedia monster that resulted in a lump of reconstituted evil.
No,
those are strong words.
Absolutely,
that, you know, would not come out of my mouth about this show. That being said, I, for lack of a better phrase, I'm a music snob. I spend a lot of time listening to music. I spend a lot of time exploring music. While I don't necessarily stick my nose up at what other people think, I'm a big fan of the saying that when it comes to matters of opinion, there is no argument.
Right.
But I also like to think that because of the time and effort that I have put into exploring music, that I maybe have a more experienced ear than some people do.
Well, this show wasn't made for the people with experienced ears, Mike. This show was made for the people who aren't.
That's exactly my point, is that because of that, and again, it makes me sound so snobbish and I hate it, but music is like the only category where I will talk this way about it. But like I legitimately feel that my tastes are above what this show has to offer. And God, as I say that, like I can't. Like, it makes me almost gag because I hate talking about myself that way.
But. Well, you're not a douchebag, but you don't sound like a douchebag. But I will say this. It's the same way that Jeopardy kind of like has that higher echelon of like people who are a little bit more intelligent that watch Jeopardy typically. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, so, absolutely.
So it's just that this is made for the masses and not made for the exclusives in whatever category it is. It doesn't happen to be our category. And that's what it really comes down to at the end of the day. And it's unfortunate that, you know, we aren't the biggest fans of, gosh, I could introduce you to 100 of my friends who love this show and will never miss an episode of it.
Absolutely. And that's the thing is, we are far outnumbered.
Hell yeah.
Well, I don't know about far outnumbered, like, globally, but you know what I'm saying? Like, right. Generally speaking, the not fans are outnumbered by the fans when it comes to American Idol.
Yeah. And it's so funny because I, like I said, even when my buddy Carlos made the show, I didn't watch the show. I just watched the highlights ever because I know they were going to post them on social, and I cut through all the BS and didn't have to see that. I just had to see him on there shaking his booty, and it was hilarious and wonderful, and I loved it. And so, I mean,
real quick, I just remembered another thought I had while you were talking, which was so. First of all, I do 100% agree with you that being mean and choosing bad people, that's awful. Like, that is, I just cannot get behind that.
And again, that's my opinion. The production company's like, it's not awful because it's making us money. I get why they're doing it. I get it.
Yes, 100%. Agree totally. But it did make me think of William Hung. And I think I almost admire him for being like the one to rise above that, right? Like, it didn't matter that he was terrible because he loved what he was doing and everybody loved him because of it. And he got his own little stardom, even though he was brought onto the show just because it was like, look how terrible this guy is. He's like, you know what? I don't care. I like doing this. And, you know,
and
he got an album. He was on Arrested Development. I'm sure he's doing fine for himself.
He's doing fine. Well, I mean, at the end of the day, I mean, there is the whole fight that people say, look, you wouldn't have auditioned for the show if you didn't know what could happen. And that's very, very true. I understand that. But for me, it was never a favorite of mine. I'm glad we talked about it because there was so much to really talk about with it. And it really did change. It did not just shape those years of television. It continues to this day to shape how television is now because of the success that it had at its time.
Yeah, and I think that's what I want to end with, is we talk at great length about how Millionaire has changed the aesthetic of shows.
Correct.
This changed the, like I said, other channels were rearranging their schedule. This literally changed the way companies did business in the television industry.
There's arguments for both Millionaire and this show as to whether it changed for good or for bad.
Absolutely.
But
absolutely,
the truth is that this was a big enough show that there was no way we couldn't do it because of the fact that it did make that change.
Yeah. And again, I mean, the ratings speak for themselves, right? At the end of the day, I can say, oh, I'm a music snob. By the way, I'm a music snob that's a Vanilla Ice fan, so take all of my stuff with a grain of salt.
That's all good.
But, I mean, at the end of the day, again, I'm Carla Peterson of the San Diego Union-Tribune. Who the hell am I to say 30.6 million people per episode are wrong, right? So,
yeah, we're no
the
experts,
numbers speak for themselves.
That's for sure. Absolutely.
Yeah.
All right, Mike. Well, thanks, man. That was, you know, as much as I was dreading doing American Idol, because I was like, is it a real game show? You know, that's the main question that we asked. I'm really glad now that we're done with it that we did it, because it really did make a big difference in the world of television.
Could not agree more. As we were going into it, I was like, oh, this one's going to be so, like, just a slog to write and all that kind of stuff. But I mean, obviously, as you can tell, we talked so much about it. I was fascinated the more I dove into this show.
Absolutely. All right, well, if it was good for nothing else for you and I, then it was good for an episode. So we got an episode out of it.
Honestly, I hope that this is one of our more interesting episodes.
Well, we'll find out. All right, and that's all the time we've got for today. I think we've gone more than enough time at this point.
Indeed. Yeah, so thank you, Tom. Thank you, Christian. Thank you, BuzzBlog. Thank you, Carla Peterson of the San Diego Union Tribune, for letting us claim that you are a nobody. Thank you for everybody to listening to our rants about American Idol and social problems and whatnot. And if you have any concerns about what we said, just, you know, keep them to yourself. It's fine. We don't need to hear about it.
Tune in again next time. We're going to bring you the latest and greatest of the world of game shows, as well as a brand new featured show too.
And of course, we are always on social: Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, tellthemwhattheyvewon.com.
Please subscribe, share, and drop a review if you like what you heard.
And if you didn't like what you heard, I'm going to hire Simon Cowell to give you a call and leave some thoughts on your voicemail.
Gosh, can you imagine what his cameos are going to cost in the future?
Oh, my God. I didn't even think about that.
He could probably charge $1,000, dude, just to get
to, like, trash
ripped.
Talk people?
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Dude, it would be amazing.
I mean, fantasy football people would eat that up, I bet.
Oh, yeah, they would. Absolutely. All right, Mike. We'll see you next week, buddy.
Bye, Tom.
You've been listening to America's favorite game show podcast, Tell Them What They've Won, a JTAC audio production, copyright 2021. No part of this podcast may be reproduced by anyone without the express written consent of the creators. For more information or to contact us, please go to tellthemwhattheyvewon.com. Okay, Mike, what did you learn this week?
Another one that's kind of hard to phrase, but I think I learned how to appreciate art forms that I don't actually appreciate. Does that make sense? Like, American Idol is not a thing that I like or appreciate or care about, but when I see the joy that it brings other people, I can appreciate that. I appreciate it on a meta level. Does that make sense?
No, oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Awesome.
Your appreciation is like porn. You know it when you see it.
Yeah, I don't know if I'd go with that, but sure, that's fine.
I just wanted to bring that up from last episode, so there we go.
Oh, right. Okay, good, good. Yeah, what about you, Tom? What'd you learn?
Mike, I learned why. I've always thought I never liked American Idol, and I never really dove deep into why I didn't like it. But as we discussed it this week, I learned exactly why I didn't like it. And a lot of that is because what we talked about, which is it was written for the masses, and I am not one of the masses. So what I'm really saying that I've learned is when it comes to music and these music shows, maybe it's a lot of reality shows, I am not the audience for this. And it wasn't written for me. And I can definitely appreciate it like you did, even though it's not something I appreciate.
Hmm. Yeah.
Copyright 2021, a JTEC Audio Production.